Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show. Our special guest today is life coach, motivational speaker, author, is Pastor Joseph Bryant Jr. Pastor Joe, welcome to the show.
How are you? Great to be here. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You know, it's always interesting to me to try to get to know somebody quickly. This is where I want to start. Talk a little bit about your parents and where you grew up.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I love talking about my parents. My parents are both still with us. I have the privilege of living around the corner from the house I grew up in. And so I see my parents quite often. My dad just turned 85 years old last week. Still drives, still cooks every day, still does gardening, chores around the house, comes to my house, and when he sees the yard needs help, he gets into my yard. My mom is 82, former administrator in education, brilliant mind. They're both from Selma, Alabama, came out here in 1965, and I look at both of them with such admiration. They have invested so much into my life. I wouldn't be who I am today without them supporting every dream, goal, or crazy idea I've ever had my entire life. And I attribute my character and my makeup as a person to them. I get my work ethic from my father because he always worked two jobs all my life. He was a bus driver in San Francisco in the evenings, but during the day he had a painting company. And so he would literally get up in the morning, go paint a house until about 3 o'clock, come home and change, and then drive a bus from about 4 to midnight. And that was his life. And so that work drive is something I got from him. My mom is a master organizer. Even to this day, she has notepads in every room where she can write things down, lists and reminders. And so my organizational skills that, you know, even to this day, I write everything down, take notes and everything. That comes from my mom. So my parents are amazing, and I'm really grateful for them.
And did you have siblings?
I did. Well, yeah, I do. My brother, 3 years younger than I am, he's fantastic. He lives in Hayward, so we're both here in the Bay Area. He's married, has 3 kids. And of course, he works multiple jobs because that's what we do. So he's he works at Woodside High School. He's the campus supervisor at Woodside High, but he's also the Spanish translator because he's a fluent Spanish speaker. And so he's a translator there. And then he also works, you know, when he finishes at the school, he also works for United Airlines in the evening. And so, you know, he's great.
Wow, you both are extraordinarily busy. Hey, talk about when you were in high school. I'm really curious, what kind of kid were you in high school growing up?
I wore suits in high school.
So suits?
Suits, yeah. I actually started wearing suits in junior high. It was called junior high back then. I started wearing suits in junior high. And then when I got to high school, I kind of continued that pattern. At least 2 or 3 days a week, I'd be wearing a three-piece suit to high school. So that's the kind of kid I was. I was a good student, but I was always into extracurricular stuff, especially in music at the time. So I was a part of the music department as a musician. Obviously, I was playing in the bands and different things. I was in the jazz band and our travel band. But then I was also the student conductor of our pep squad band. And so as a junior and senior in high school, I led the pep squad band that played at basketball games, at football games. So I was leader of that band. Teacher just, you know, said, hey, have at it. And so I did. That was a lot of my high school. Did some musical theater in high school, not as an actor, but as a musician. So I was actually the director of the pit band for our musical theater department. So, you know, I think a lot of my leadership development began to evolve in high school, along with, you know, my attempts at fashion, which at the time was just a lot of three-piece suits. But hopefully I've improved some of that since then.
Okay, I wasn't going to leave that alone. How does that look in high school, where you, junior high school, you're wearing three-piece suits. How does that, is that part of the school or is that part of just you?
Just me. I was a church kid who loved church, and one of the things I loved about church was dressing up. And so that's what I enjoyed wearing suits so much that that became my thing in junior high school. And I was, you know, voted best dressed. Obviously, it was a landslide, and you know, because I was the guy walking around, you know, 12, 13 years old wearing a suit and in the hallways. And I loved it. And you know, suit and tie. And then when I got to high school, you know, I kind of tried to balance it out a little bit more. So I only wore suits, you know, every other day or maybe 2 days a week. Whereas in junior high, I guess my last year in junior high school, I probably wore a suit every day.
Amazing. Okay. Musician, what instrument?
I was a lead saxophone player, but I also play keyboard. And so I was, you know, it was great for me when I was leading the bands. I had my keyboard with me so I could play and I could, you know, kind of orchestrate things. And you know, when we were doing musical theater, I had my keyboard so I could play, you know, chords for the singers that were singing on stage. So I played sax and keys. And so lead saxophone player and then keyboard player as well.
Okay, so you graduated from high school and you're about to go off to college. Where did you go and why did you go there?
I went to the University of California, Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz, Banana Slugs. And I went there because I wanted to go to a UC. I had done my research and found out that the University of California system was the top public university system in the country. And so I definitely wanted to go to a UC. Didn't want to go to Berkeley. Everybody talked about Berkeley. I didn't want to be another guy trying to go to Berkeley. And UC Davis didn't have the major that I wanted. And UC Santa Cruz just seemed like it had the right academic stuff. And it was the right distance because at the time I was the music director for my church and I wanted to be able to still come home on the weekends. So Santa Cruz fit all of those things for me. It had the major that I wanted, you know, going in at the time, I wanted to be an econ major. I wanted to focus on consumer marketing economics. And so they had that specific major. I ended up changing after my first year to sociology, which I loved, but I wanted to be able to drive home easily. So that 70-mile trek from my house to the campus was easy to do on Friday nights to be able to come home and play for my church on the weekend.
So you're about to be done with Santa Cruz. University of Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz. So what are your thoughts? Did you have a great idea of what you wanted to do after you got out of college?
Great question. So going into my junior year, I think it was, is when I really felt I was being called to the ministry. And it was a real struggle for me to try to figure out how to navigate that at 20 years old, what that would mean for me, what that would mean for my life, how that would change my trajectory or my goals. You know, I just changed majors from econ to sociology. So I was still teetering in that. Even I said, you know, I wanted to go into economics and consumer money management because I wanted to make a lot of money. But then I was, you know, feeling this tug towards doing more community-based work and going into sociology. And then I was sensing this pull to ministry. And so middle of my junior year, I called my pastor and I said, I think I need to be licensed and go into ministry, but I want to stay in college. I want to stay in and finish my degree and then just kind of see what happens next. And so I was licensed at 20 as a minister, became youth minister of my church in addition to music director. And began to just try to figure out what the next steps were. Fortunately, my parents, as supportive as they were for me to go into ministry, because they had seen, you know, since I was a kid, I mean, I started teaching Sunday school when I was 10. So they had always seen that side of my personality, but they were so practical. They wanted me to not only finish my bachelor's degree, but I was, you know, my mom was in education. So they encouraged me to pursue my teaching credential. And so coming out of University of California, Santa Cruz, I actually applied to seminary in Atlanta. I was going to go to Morehouse Theological Seminary in Atlanta. I got accepted, changed my mind, decided to stay home and work on my teacher credential first, get that security of, you know, knowing that that could be a career forever, no matter what I did. And so I stayed back and I went to Patton University in Oakland and got my multiple subject teacher credential. And while I was there, I worked a couple of jobs just to, you know, pay a few bills, but I was also given the opportunity to teach music, which was fantastic. So, you know, the transition, it was a lot of thoughts and you know, contemplation and prayers and a lot of other things to figure out my next steps. And so what ended up happening was after I graduated, teacher credential, teaching job as a music teacher, and wanted to get a credential so I could go even further.
So now that you're established in your church, talk about Rainbow Push and your relationship with Jesse Jackson. Now, how did that happen?
So the church where I grew up, I was the youth minister there. And then after a while, I wanted to experience something a little bit bigger. I wanted to, you know, we were part of a small church. We had grown as a church, you know, it was a decent size, especially for San Francisco. But I wanted to do more. And so I was invited to another church by some friends of mine. And actually, there weren't that many people at my church where I was that were my age. And so I went to a church that had more young adults and loved it. And when I went there, there was an older pastor there, and he made me his assistant pastor. And so at 23, I was the assistant pastor of the church. Little did I know that 6 months later, the pastor would pass away. He had cancer, and at that time he wasn't being able to be treated. Back this was, you know, mid-90s, and so he passed away. He had already told the church that he wanted me to be his successor. So at 26, cancer for 2 years. At 26 years old, I became the senior pastor of the church that I'm at now. And so that, you know, the church grew, and we paid off our building in Daly City, which is a suburb of San Francisco. We were in Daly City in a building. We paid that off. And then I had my eyes on doing something bigger and greater. And so we found a warehouse in San Francisco. We bought and started doing major community work and, you know, youth fairs and, you know, block parties and outreach projects and all these kind of things. And Amos Brown, Dr. Amos Brown, who was the president of the NAACP, longtime civil rights leader in our area, pastor of Third Baptist Church, he heard about me. He started coming to the things I was doing because he was on the other side of town. And he said, "I want to introduce you to Jesse Jackson." And I was like, "Wow, okay, that's great." Because him and Reverend Jackson have been friends, you know, forever. And so the next time Reverend Jackson came to town, Reverend Brown told Reverend Jackson, "You've got to meet this young man. He's really doing great work, doing community things." And as a matter of fact, I was not only doing things in our community, but I was also a part of the gang task force for Governor Schwarzenegger, you know, a bunch of other things. So I met Reverend Jackson. We immediately hit it off. And after our first meeting, the next day he told me to come back, hang out with him, drive him around. Drove him to Sacramento, as a matter of fact. We had an event in Sacramento, drove him up there. And I'm sitting there in my car, you know, I met Jesse Jackson yesterday and I'm chauffeuring him today, just amazed. He's taking a nap in my little car, driving to Sacramento. And so I'm like, this is kind of cool. And so from there, Reverend Jackson asked me to help with some projects. Then he, you know, asked me to assist. As the years began to evolve, different things that he was doing with churches, and I would volunteer to help. During the housing crisis of the early 2000s, he asked me to be his West Coast representative to go to the banks to try to help save church buildings from being shut down. I went back and forth between Sacramento, San Francisco, and LA to visit churches to tell them how to teach their members about foreclosures and, you know, where they need to go to try to save their homes. And I did all this as a volunteer. And in the meantime, Reverend Jackson started inviting me to his fundraisers, and I've been working with athletes for years. So I'd bring athletes to his fundraisers, and he's like, where do these guys come from? And I said, I brought them, it'd be former NFL, former NBA guys. And I said, yeah, well, I'm kind of a spiritual advisor for athletes. So they call me the player's pastor. So, I invited him to come. And then he said, well, I want you to take over my sports program. I was like, okay. So I met Isaiah Thomas, the original Isaiah, the bad boy. And Isaiah and I and an attorney, Barbara Arnwine, put together a sports platform for Reverend Jackson to start helping athletes transition and find their career paths after sports. And we built that out over the years. And so I'm still national sports director for Reverend Jackson. I'm his liaison to the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and NCAA, do programs with athletes, do community projects, all types of engagements in diversity. And then on top of that, he said, well, since you're in the Bay Area, I want you to help me with Silicon Valley. It's like, okay. And so we started meeting with Silicon Valley companies, and I'm, sitting there at the table with him and Mark Zuckerberg, or him and Tim Cook from Apple, or whoever. And he would ask these, executives for things to happen with minority hires and programs in the community for kids and for youth, at-risk youth. And then he would just leave and say, okay, Reverend Brian's going to take over, and he's going to come up with a plan. And so that's what I've been doing for the past several years. So I wear two official hats for Reverend Jackson and Rainbow Push, National Sports Director and the Executive Director of West Coast Silicon Valley Partnership Programs.
I'm curious, what is your biggest challenge? I'm a retired athlete. I kind of had my own plan in. I was, I'm not sure I was an oddity, but when I was a rookie, I had a retirement plan. So what's your biggest challenge that way with athletes?
Well, yes, you were an oddity, because most guys do not think about retirement coming into the league, although I encourage it. I've been able to go to the NBA draft lottery and the NBA draft the past few years. And that's one of the things that I try to talk to families about. I want to talk to the people around the athlete, that as wonderful as this experience is, he's going to be very young when he finishes. So be thinking about what's next. He's getting drafted at 19 or 20, but he's going to be done at 30 or 34 or 35, maybe, and he's got the rest of his life to live. So my biggest challenge is oftentimes the thing that you did isn't done, and it's my biggest challenge. It's helping athletes begin to think about what's next. It's gotten a little bit easier. I got to admit, when I first started working with athletes over 20 years ago, it was like pulling teeth to have these conversations. And I had to literally wait till guys hit the wall or were broke. I mean, even the ESPN piece on broke, some of those guys I ended up working with, other players that, lost all of their money, or they were, mentally, emotionally, or relationally in a mess. Then I'd come in and kind of sweep things up. So it's become more acceptable, as well as just kind of more a part of the climate of athletes today to plan their future. I think a lot of the athletes that are doing different businesses, and honestly, I think some of it started with, just the commercialization. And I give Peyton Manning a lot of credit, because I think what Peyton started doing as a current player, just being in commercials and starting to do other things, it sparked some things. And obviously, what LeBron James does with his companies and different guys like that, that has become the norm. And so, I've been in the room with Andre Iguodala at Google, talking about his investment portfolio and doing things with Andreessen Horowitz, and these guys are thinking about, what do I do? And really the big thing, Bill, I think that's worked best is helping athletes see the power of their platform, that you can go into rooms, you can meet people, you can have conversations others can't have, because people want to meet you. So take advantage of it while you can, and let's go, let's make a move here. And so it's gotten a lot easier, I must admit, over the past few years. There's still some guys that, don't want to listen. I take that back. They will listen to the conversation, but they don't always know what to do next. And so sometimes a lot of hand-holding, trying to get guys to go there. But I'm glad that it's more common now for people to talk about what's next for me.
you know, basketball, I'll just go with basketball right now, is such a business because it's so much more money that's involved. So now I always call basketball is like it could be a two contract league because you can have your rookie contract. And then now, even if you made the a mid-level exception, so you're only going to make $9-10 million
right
for 5 years, you can be done by the time you're 30 or 31. So it is a different beast than when guys came out like myself in the 80s and 90s because there's so much more money. So it is really great idea, great thinking to get involved with companies. You can be a lot more diverse, you can be a lot more thinking. So I'm just curious about Silicon Valley, and I know you guys do work down there. So talk about the diversity down there, not only and women who are involved. It's just really, I'm just really curious about that.
That was really the goal going into Silicon Valley. 2013, 14, our goal was to help bring diversity to Silicon Valley. And in doing so, we asked companies, we sent letters to the top 25 companies in Silicon Valley, asked them for their diversity numbers, asked them for their EEO-1 reports and, you know, their employment records and different things, you know, and initially there was some pushback, but then we were able to have maybe half of the companies initially start. And I got to get Google and Intel a lot of credit because they were like right up front and they said, hey, here's what we're doing. And what we were able to do with Reverend Jackson, honestly, was help reshape his platform to where people knew he wasn't coming to be antagonistic. He was coming to be an ally and a partner. And so the fact that we would, you know, come to a shareholders meeting, but Reverend Jackson wasn't there to protest. He was there to ask, how do we partner? That was huge. And so, you know, Meg Whitman at HP and other companies, you know, we would have the follow-up meetings and say, listen, what can we do to help? Because obviously you need more minority participation, you need more women, you need more people of color involved in the entire pipeline. And so we've been able to develop a lot of pipelines and connections to HBCUs, to minority companies. And because of my role in sports, I brought in a lot of athletes into that space. So when you talk about, you know, the money factor, I think there are a few things that end up happening with the athletes. There are guys, and I mentioned, you know, Andre Iguodala, and there are a lot of other guys, you know, Kevin Durant, when he came to the Warriors, that just blew his mind. I mean, he won two championships, but he also became a serial investor in Silicon Valley companies. And so that's a part of what we've been able to do with the relationship between sports and Silicon Valley is guys, you know, some guys want to invest. Other guys, you know, there were a couple of guys that were, you know, basically coaching AAU teams, or, you know, they were just, you know, trying to make ends meet. And I was able to get them interviews, internships, introductions, you know, with companies. And they in the companies, we would take athletes to companies and we would say, you know, I'm bringing XYZ athlete. He wants to meet your HR team, or he wants to meet your, you know, various teams. So, you know, we've got the guys who have money and wanted to invest, had the guys that were basically trying to survive and introduce them to Silicon Valley for jobs. And then right in the middle, we were able to bring in several athletes, and I'm going to go see one in a couple of weeks, that wanted to do technology, you know, that literally want to get involved in the growth of technology and, you know, new headsets for football players and e-gaming and sport. You know, there are probably 20, 25 guys that I work with now that are doing some type of, former athletes, that are doing some type of technology business. And that's pretty cool too.
Awesome. Not that you're not busy enough. What's next?
That's a great question. I love that question. Outside of the question about my parents, this is probably my favorite one. What's next? Well, I have two amazing children. My daughter just graduated from high school. She's on her way to Loyola Marymount in LA. My son just finished his sophomore year at California Baptist in Riverside. So I love spending as much of my time as humanly possible with them. And now that they're going to be away in college, I want to make sure I have enough flexibility to do that. So I'm trying to streamline some of my work. And I have to be honest, the pandemic increased my work exponentially. Everything I do, it ended up raising, you know, exponential levels. The community work was more. The technology work was extremely higher because we were helping small businesses and seniors and churches stay aligned in technology. So everything I was doing, you know, before the pandemic took another level. And so right now I'm trying to level off everything. And in doing so, I'm trying to set things up, Bill, to where I'm less needed. I want to set things up so that I can, my church is amazing. I'm so grateful for them. I get a lot of flexibility because I have to travel so much between the athletes and Reverend Jackson's work and different things. But I need to finish some things there as we've, you know, taken on such a significant role in San Francisco. Rainbow Push, you know, Reverend Jackson's health is very challenged. He's been battling Parkinson's for the past 6 years. And so it's getting progressively worse. So there's some things I'm trying to solidify with that. So what's next for me is trying to just get everything well established so I can spend as much time as I can with my kids.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Pastor Joe, thank you so much for being on. You and I must spend more time together. I do try to stay busy as well. I'm not as busy as you. So, but let's see if we can map out some time and have some more conversations.
Awesome. I would love that, Bill. Thank you so much. And I want to just commend you. In closing, I just want to commend you for being an example to other athletes. I shared that with you years ago that you are the type of athlete that I can point other athletes to and say, this is the way you do it. You have a successful career, you know, whatever that may look like. In your case, with the championships and the opportunities that you had, both collegiate and pro, obviously, but then to be able to transition into a meaningful role that you have now, influencing the next generation, having just tremendous impact in diversity in the educational system, as well as with athletes. You continue to mentor a lot of guys, and that's the way to do it. And so I can refer to you as an example of, you know, planning for your future, use your platform and allow those things to open up other opportunities for the greater good. And you've been a perfect example of that. So thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very, very kind.
It's very, very true. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate the time.